Call the meeting to order, having a set of
we have a set of House members and a set of senators, actually a quorum of each. And I think we don't really have officials side by sides. We've decided for the meetings today. At some point, I know that Representative Solberg, who isn't here now, will be chairing Ways and Means. And a bunch of, are all of us on Ways and Means? Are two of us, are you on Ways and Means or at all? Is Winkler? I'm not sure. Okay, well, we may have to, if there are some votes, we may have to be called for votes. At least it's not too far away. So we'll go for a while. The our thoughts are. Let's see. How can I forget them so fast?
For 2 minutes.
Yeah, but
Madam Chair, you and I have talked about just for planning purposes, so people know what they're going to do. We'll probably have to repeat this at the end of the meeting if people come and go. We will be meeting tomorrow. Probably about a half an hour after the second body adjourns. There's a possibility, I believe, the House could have a longer floor session. So I think if we do not meet by, say, 4 p.m., we will not meet. And I can say that we will not meet, certainly in any event, I think we're going to have our work done by 5 o'clock or so. So we're not going to go into the evenings tomorrow, but the plan is to meet for about a half an hour after the second body adjourns. I believe the House is taking up the tax bill on Friday, so that could be quite long, and so we're not expecting to have a meeting on Friday. Saturday morning, we probably will be meeting about at 9 o'clock in the morning. We're not going to go long in the day, probably late morning, early afternoon, but we're planning right now on having a Saturday meeting. So just for planning purposes, that's kind of what we've discussed.
Okay. I think at this point we're going to continue with staff going over the parts of the bill, and we've been guaranteed a side-by-side pretty soon, so okay. I'll have that exciting. So I know we're going. Mark, are you
sure
on now? Okay.
Madam Chair and members, Mr. Bodern from Senate Counsel and I have are going to divide up the responsibility for going through Article. We're trying to review Article 2 of the Senate bill and Article 2 of the House bill. As Representative Kahn noted, we don't have the official side-by-side, but we thought we can still walk through this somewhat efficiently. And you have the two documents in front of you. On the House bill, we'll be starting on page 21. It's the House version of Senate file 1997. It's labeled at the top, fourth unofficial engrossment. And on the Senate bill, Article 2 starts on page 15. That's Senate file 1997, the second engrossment. It happens that there are more House provisions in this article than Senate provisions, so I'll start going through and explaining some of the House provisions and can try to answer any questions that people might have. And then as the Senate provision comes up, Mr. Bodern will take over and talk about the Senate provisions. So with that, Madam Chair, beginning on page 21 of the House bill, the first five sections in this article deal with legislative administrative matters. Section 1 requires executive branch agencies to deliver bills, their department bills, to the revisor by November 1st before a regular session. It then encourages the governor to submit a State of the State address in January of the odd-numbered years, and it then requires the governor to submit bills necessary to implement the governor's operating budget within 2 weeks after the budget is required to be submitted to the legislature. Section 2 would, effective with the 2009 session, move the legislature to 8.5 by 11 inch paper for bills and amendments if they are printed on paper. Section 3 requires the LCC to establish a joint legislative public information office, and it specifies the duties of the office, which would include legislative directories, schedules of legislative meetings, legislative TV, and other functions as assigned. Sections 4 and 5 are both also aimed at joint House-Senate operations. It requires the House and Senate to adopt rules that would set one time as the regular hour of convening daily sessions, and then it would encourage the House and the Senate to adopt rules to establish a system of joint standing committees and to or to provide that House and Senate committees with similar jurisdictions would meet at the same time to facilitate joint meetings. Madam Chair, Section 6 expands the membership of the Legislative Commission on Pensions and Retirement. It would add two members from each chamber so that the Pension Commission would consist of 14 members. Section 7 creates a Minnesota Office of Ethnic Heritage and New Americans, which administratively would be housed in the legislative branch. It would be part public members and part legislative members. And the Senate has a comparable, somewhat comparable provision in a different place, which Mr. Bodden, I think, can explain.
Madam Chair and members, you'll find that on page 40 of Senate File 1997, the second engrossment. And that's really, it's almost identical. The big difference, I guess, is the name in the Senate terms of the Minnesota Commission on New Americans. But there may be a few other nuances that we can explain more when we have a side-by-side before us, but they are basically very similar.
Madam Chair, turning back to the House bill on page 24, Section 8 appropriates to the legislative auditor the proceeds that it receives from billing metropolitan commissions. I believe Mr. Lundeen indicated yesterday that the Senate appropriates this money to the legislative auditor. So, as he noted, both chambers accomplish a similar result, but just with a little bit different way of doing it.
Then, Madam Chair, the next provision in the Senate bill, and Mr. Shepard and I are just going in order of the statutory coding here. It might help you a little bit when we're moving back and forth. On page 15 of the Senate version of Senate File 1997, Section 1 is a this provision has to do, and it's, there's another related provision elsewhere in this bill. When a this clarifies that when a governor is reelected, the governor will not need to reissue executive orders. This makes it clear that those orders expire 90 days after the governor leaves office. Then there are a series of I'll turn it back to Mr. Shepard at this point.
Madam Chair, members, the next section on the House side at the bottom of page 24 establishes the position of Poet Laureate for Minnesota, which a person would be appointed by the governor. And the next two sections in the House bill, sections 10 and 11, are identical to sections in the Senate bill. These deal, the first one deals with the Secretary of State's office and fees for assumed names. The second one, the House and the Senate both impose temporary technology surcharges. And I believe that those are identical. We'll have to double-check that later, but I believe they're identical. Madam Chair, the next group of sections in the House bill, it begins on the bottom of page 25 and continues all the way over to page 34, are all related. This is a bill that was originally House File 1309, Representative Hillstrom. It deals with the state auditor. It redefines political subdivision in a number of places in statute and changes a number of cross-references. It also changes some of the powers of the state auditor relating to special districts. And there's one provision in this cluster of sections that is not part of that bill. That's on Section 30. Section 30 on page 33 of the House bill. This relates to the state auditor, and it would enact a data practices provision that's parallel to what exists in current law for the legislative auditor. Provides that if the state auditor, before releasing a report, gives person a review copy of data, that person has to protect it from unlawful disclosure. That was not part of House File 1309. I think when the side-by-side is issued, the Senate passed a companion bill to House File 1309. It was Senate File 1436. Senator Roebling carried that, and I believe that bill is very similar to what is in this House bill, and when we get the side-by-side, we can identify any differences. Madam Chair, the next provision of the House bill is on page 34, section 32, which authorizes the Attorney General to provide assistance to veterans and their families. And then section 33, which requires the State Board of Investment to file an annual report on the activities and work product of any investment consultants retained by the board. Section 34, at the bottom of page 34 in the House bill, is derived from an initiative of Representative Winkler. This is a legislative commission on terrorism and disaster preparedness. And that continues all the way over to the top of page 36. Page 36 is one of three sections in the bill that are similar, if not identical, to the Senate bill that deal with the Office of Grants Management. This first section is dealing with data maintained by the office. There are some slight technical differences between the House and the Senate version of this, but I believe they're technical, and when we have the side-by-side, we can point out exactly, I think it'll be easier to point out what those are. Section 36 on page 37 of the House bills is a different issue. This relates to executive branch budget data, and it provides that executive branch legislative and budget proposals, including preliminary drafts, become public data after the budget is presented to the legislature. Under the current law, much of the data is public after presentation to the legislature, but preliminary drafts do not become public.
Then, Madam Chair and members, I'll take you to the Senate version of Senate File 1997, page 17. Section 5 is in the middle of that page. That's related to the earlier provision on executive orders, and what this does is clarify that governors who are re-elected need to reappoint all of their commissioners. The appointment doesn't automatically carry over into the next term, and those are subject to Senate confirmation as provided. Then you'll see Section 6 toward the bottom of page 17, and there are a string of related provisions. The net effect of what all those provisions accomplish is to limit state agencies to one deputy commissioner and to eliminate assistant commissioner positions. And that's related to sections 9, 15, 16, 17, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, and 29 in this bill. We'll note them as we go through. Then on the bottom of page 17, there's a provision that actually, I should turn it back to Mr. Shepherd. I think there's an item in the House bill that needs to be dealt with.
Yes, Madam Chair, on the bottom of page 37 of the House side, section 37 is a provision that states that parking spaces on Aurora Avenue in front of the Capitol will be reserved for the public.
Well, and Madam Chair, as you may know, with the renovation of the Capitol, that whole street area would go away.
Right. Yeah. Nobody will.
No, we'll be happy. When we get done with the renovation of the Capitol, that's a moot point. So.
Good. That may be the wonderful compromise position. Let's do it in advance.
I think you have to tie them together because one has to go with the other. We'll do the renovation of the Capitol and not have to worry about the issue anymore.
Well, looking at the membership of this committee, we might have the votes for the renovation of the Capitol on this committee as opposed to some others. Okay.
Anyway.
Let's go on.
Then, Madam Chair, well, actually, this is there's some minor differences between the next item in the House bill, which is, well, it starts basically at the top of page 38, and this relates to authority for the CAP board. And the House language allows them to basically spend money that's collected from public bodies that are subject to their review and have to pay a fee for that review. And that appropriates the money for fiscal years 08 and 09. The Senate language, which is found on page, the top of page 18 and the Senate bill, is permanent. It does the same thing, but permanently. And then the next item you'll see on I think Mr. Shepherd needs to explain section 39 in the House bill.
Yep. Madam Chair and members, the next cluster of sections in the House bill. I'll deal with the state budget process. The first one is just a technical correction in the name of a committee. Section 40 requires that after the budget forecasts, the Commissioner of Finance would give the legislature information that illustrates how the base level budget is projected to be spent. Section 41 requires that within 2 weeks after the November forecast, the Commissioner of Finance would deliver to the governor and the legislature a forecast of cash flow for the general fund. Section 42 requires that, this is similar to an earlier section in the House bill, that the bills needed to implement the governor's budget recommendations would have to be submitted to the legislature within 2 weeks after the budget is submitted. Section 43.
Madam Chair, is it appropriate to ask some questions as we go along, or would you prefer not?
Actually, I think I would prefer to.
Prefer to?
Yes.
Mr. Shepherd, what is the what are the timelines that have generally been followed with regard to the base budget detail and the cash flow forecast currently? I mean, are they way off of this, or what? What happens now that we would want to put in statute a requirement of, you know, 2 weeks after this or 1 week after that?
Well, I think I can answer that. We didn't get a bunch of bills, not budget and administrative changing bills. We didn't get some until a week before our deadline to hearing any bills. I don't think there are any. I don't think that there are any deadlines, and it's. You know, one of the things I think that we feel is that the executive branch ought to be able to get their bills over to the House, over to the legislature, in a more timely fashion.
So, Madam Chair, so in Section 41, that would mean that by the middle of December, they would be getting us a forecast of the cash flow, and do we get a forecast of the cash flow now? I'm just curious. I'm not saying it sounds like a bad idea. I'm just curious about what this does for us.
So, Madam Chair and Representative Ress, I think all the staff are looking at each other. We don't think we do currently get a cash flow forecast. I would note that there is an existing requirement that by October 15th of each even number year and then November 30th of the must be odd year that we do receive the base budget information. So there is at least an existing requirement regarding base budget information.
And so, Madam Chair, how would that be helpful? Why is that helpful to us? I'm not saying it's not. I'm just curious why that would be helpful to have by December 15th, let's say.
I think it's part of how state government operates, and it's part of what we need. One of the things we do have is one of our reserves is a cash flow reserve.
Mm-hmm. I understand that.
And so it's kind of interesting to see how that's going, and it may help. You know, I guess a lot of these budget reforms and so forth, these were in a bill with, I believe, from Representative Loeffler. And so I guess if we're going to have detailed discussion of this, I'd rather have it. She and Representative Tingelstadt worked on a legislative reform commission. Mm-hmm. And I think some of these things were came from the works of that commission.
Wait, how did
I feel more comfortable having
her. Did the Department
her.
Of Finance testify and say that they'd be able to do this? Or did they have any expression?
They certainly didn't
yet?
Have any objections to it.
They had no objections? Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair and Senator Rest, I have some notes, but I don't have the actual documents here that indicate that some parts of these provisions were in a bill that was introduced by Representative Solberg, who can't be here right now, and Senator Cohen. But I don't know if it was the exact language, or I don't recall the testimony in committee on those. We'd have to double check, and Representative Solberg may know when
he. Okay, I'll wait. Yes.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Riddle.
I would comment that the governor's office has raised some serious concerns about this to me.
Oh, okay. Well, we'd be pleased if you would raise them to the conference committee and tell us.
I don't know if anyone from the governor's office is here that would like to testify, but...
Well, I think we'll wait. I am very pleased that Senator Rest raised the questions, but as recalling now, it is Representative Solberg's bill. I wish members would definitely raise questions as Senator Rest did, but I think members with questions ought to target things, because then we'll make sure that when we have a detailed discussion of it, instead of us trying to remember what we thought of, we're thinking of on what particular day, that we'll make sure that we have the people here who can give, who can speak authoritatively to any issue that's questioned. Okay. So, and I don't want to pretend that I can do it to every item in the bill. Okay. Go on.
Madam Chair, the next item, I believe, is Section 43, which is a limited continuing appropriation item. It provides certain circumstances under which the base level appropriation for operations of state agencies and their programs would continue until July 31st. There have been a number of other proposals related to this topic. This provision continues appropriations until July 31st of the odd-numbered year. Madam Chair, Section 44 is in the House bill is identical to a section in the Senate bill, and believe this may have been an executive branch initiative originally.
What is it?
The next Section 45 in the House bill deals with an advisory council that is within the Department of Administration. It's named the Minnesota Assistive Technology Advisory Council. There are some clarifications to references because the federal law has changed, and this bill also provides that the council does not expire. I believe there was a separate Senate bill on this that it may even have passed the entire Senate.
Madam Chair, that's correct. That's Senate File 2174, and it has passed the Senate.
The next section in the House bill, Madam Chair, the next two sections, sections 46 and 47 on pages 40, 41, and 42, deal with outdoor lighting, and Section 46 has a number of definitions, and Section 47 provides that outdoor lighting fixtures that are replaced or installed using state funds must meet certain standards that are specified. Paragraph B, beginning in the middle of page 41, contains some exceptions. If a federal law preempts state law, if the lighting is used on a temporary basis, other exceptions. Section C has, paragraph C at the bottom of page 41 has some other, and D have some other exemptions for when this section would not apply. And on the top of page 42, the Commissioner of Administration is required to adopt a model ordinance that can be used by units of local government to reduce light pollution.
And members, I do believe the Senate has the identical or very close to identical provision in their omnibus environment bill.
Madam Chair, it looks familiar. I'm not, I'd have to find out if it's identical. But
it's Senator Dibble is the senator.
Okay.
Madam Chair, the next section on the House side, Section 48, deals with the Percent for Arts program, and it strikes from this section the $100,000 per building limit that applies under the Percent for Art programs for buildings that are paid for by the state. The next two sections, Madam Chair, are very similar in the House and the Senate. These are the ones I mentioned earlier, dealing with grant management in the executive branch. There is on page and section 49, page 44, section 49, paragraph C is not in the Senate version that I was reviewing. And section 50, I believe, is substantially identical, the House version and the Senate version. And that carries all the way over through page 46. Madam Chair, there's a long series of sections here, beginning at the top of page 47 in the House bill, that are all, they were originally part of House File 2065, which I believe was a Department of Administration initiative. Most of these relate to the State procurement system. I'll go through them quickly. Section 51 defines best and final offer as an optional step in the solicitation process that the Department of Administration can use. Section 52 modifies the definition of best value. This is not related to Article 3 in the House bill, which deals with best value for construction contracts. This is best value as it exists in current law for Department of Administration purchases of goods and services. Section 53 defines enterprise procurement. There are several other sections later that refer to the term enterprise procurement. Section 54 refers to best value as Section 55, again, amending a definition to reflect other terms in this bill. Section 56 defines strategic sourcing, which is a term that is added in other sections of this bill to the Department of Administration procurement section. Section 57 broadens the department's rulemaking authority to include the entire procurement process instead of just specified parts of it. Section 58 allows the commissioner to require that executive agency staff participate in the development of enterprise procurement. Section 59 allows the commissioner of administration to develop and implement policies that ensure the use of strategic sourcing techniques, as that's defined earlier in the bill. Section 60 provides the commissioner of administration can require an agency head to accept delegated responsibility from the commissioner in the procurement laws. Section 61 is different. It was not part of this Department of Administration bill. This was an initiative of Representative Paulson, House File 376 in the House, and this requires the Commissioner of Administration to maintain a website with a searchable database to provide the public with information on state contracts and grants. Eventually, this would provide 10 years of historical data, but it wouldn't go be retroactive. The 10-year part would be phased in.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Shepherd, what's the fiscal note on that? We were reluctant to include that in the Senate bill because we didn't have money for it.
Madam Chair, go ahead.
Yes. Madam Chair and Senator Rust, the House has $50,000 in one-time funds provided for this.
$50,000? Well, we understood it would cost a whole lot more than that, but that's very interesting.
Would change the bill.
Right. Madam Chair and Senator Rust, I do know that the bill was revised as it moved through the process to address some of the concerns of the department and the cost, but I'm not sure.
That's what you're hearing. The fiscal note, Madam Chair, the fiscal note shows from the department shows that this is a cost of $50,000, or you assigned it a cost of $50,000?
That's one of the questions we may have to get back to.
I see. Wait,
but we did have some discussion. We did change the bill.
Just curious.
A little bit.
It's a good idea. So,
yes. I thought you would like it.
Well, my bill over there. Yeah. Of course I like it.
Madam Chair, I think we do have the fiscal note here, so in a few minutes we can find that.
Okay.
My recollection is that two of the main changes that were made in this bill from its original introduction was, first of all, to limit it to contracts valued in excess of $25,000.
Mm-hmm.
And second, the original bill, if I recall correctly, required the department to actually go back 10 years from now.
And
we changed that so that it would be effective in January of 2008.
Madam Chair, Mr. Shepherd, we made those accommodations as well, and we still thought it was at a much higher cost.
What's the fiscal note?
Madam Chair, we have a preliminary fiscal note on 376, the amended version. I don't believe there's been a final fiscal note at this point, but the total cost to the state showing for fiscal year 08 was $168,000, the majority of that being in the Department of Administration of $157,000. And then the ongoing costs were shown as $75,000 per year for Department of Administration. There's an additional small cost showing up in the Trunk Highway Fund for the Transportation Department.
Madam Chair, thank you. That sounds more like what I recall.
Madam Chair, the next cluster of sections on page 50 and 51, section 63 through 65, again, all deal with enterprise procurement and strategic sourcing in the Department of Administration. They're all part of the department initiative. On page 52, the language appearing on lines 15 to 17 was not part of the Department of Administration bill. This is identical to language in the Senate bill on section 12 of the Senate bill that provides that an agency can't contract out its previously eliminated jobs for 4 years without considering the same former employees on the seniority unit layoff list. Section 66 on page 53 requires contracts to include a written performance evaluation of work done under the contract. Section 67 forbids a contractor from maintaining an action against a state employee or agency who discloses information about a contractor unless specified evidence is shown by clear and convincing evidence. Section 68 deals with state agency call centers, and at the top of page 54 forbids an agency from entering into a contract for a call center or similar services if the service, without determining if the service can be provided by state employees, and provides that the services must be at offices located in the United States. Section 69 in the middle of page 54 amends the laws governing reverse action, reverse auctions. Under the current law, reverse auction can be used for services only for computer services. This section strikes that limitation to computer services, but then adds a new limitation saying that reverse auction can't be used for engineering design or architectural services or for building and construction contracts.
I note that Representative Solberg is here, so maybe we should go back to that section that we thought he knew something about.
Well, I'm glad I know something about. Which section is it?
Where was that, Mark? It was on the budget. It was from your bill.
Oh.
On the budgeting process,
40 and 41.
The one on the base budget detail, the cash flow forecast, and the submission, and the state budget process. I think the one before that too.
Madam Chair, this kind of comes from our fiscal staff as well, and they would like to, as I understand it, be able to. What are our real true needs in the cash flow? You know, we've got a cash flow, I think, of $350 in it now, and my understanding is that, you know, is that the right number? Should it be $280? Should it be? And so I think this is an attempt, if I recall right, to be able to have a Department of in the forecast to give us a better number instead of just picking something out.
And the other question was, with some of the language that we've been here about proposals when bills are submitted and that kind of thing, was that, I can't remember if that was in your bill, Representative Loeffler's bill, or apparently now Representative Thiessen's bill is part of this, and the question is, was there any... how different is it from existing procedures, and did finance give us any indication that this was a burden or they couldn't do these things or wasn't all right? Do you remember anything about
Madam that? Madam Chair, I don't know if finance is ready to react to that, but I know there's been some frustration, not only from this governor, but from governors in general. Or, I mean, they have their budget, and then you wait for the bills to come, and you wait for the bills to come. And it's an attempt to say, you know, if you've got the process in place, you've been working on your budget since July, August of the previous year. You know, we understand that you need to have some adjustments to the February forecast or the November forecast, but we'd like to have those budgets submitted in a more timely fashion. I don't think it's a shot at this governor or anything else, but it's just a way to be able to get those budget bills into us so that we can have full hearings on them. And I don't know if finance wants to react to that.
Representative Solberg, one of the things I said was that we would just
we could raise questions as we go along, but we get into more detailed discussion. I'm actually pleased to see that my answer off the top of my head was almost as good as yours.
Right. So. I'm sure my answer is off the top of my head, too. Maybe we've been long here too long.
Okay.
Then, Madam Chair and members, I'll take you to the Senate version of Senate File 1997 on page 23. The middle of that page has Section 13, which encourages the Commissioner of Administration to promote persons with developmental disabilities to provide document imaging services for state and local government agencies. The House actually appropriates money, I think, for a more direct effort to do that, and that's shown in Article 1 of the House bill. Again, that'll show up a little more easily on the side-by-side when we get that.
Okay. Madam Chair, the next section is a similar topic in both bills. On the House side, Section 70 at the bottom of page 54 provides for designating as targeted groups businesses that are majority owned and operated by veterans who have served in Operation Enduring Freedom or Operation Iraqi Freedom. The Senate has passed a broader bill that would designate all businesses majority owned and operated by veterans as a targeted group under this program. So similar concept, but the bills have a substantial difference there.
Madam Chair.
Senator Riff.
I wonder, is this provision carried in our veterans?
Madam Chair, Senator Rest, no, it's not in another omnibus bill from the Senate side.
I guess, well, one of the points that one of our committee members raised is if you designated all veterans, you'd get an awful lot of people who probably don't need affirmative action. So we narrowed it in this bill. Representative Riddle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe someone can answer. Is this the section for which a disparity study is needed?
No. No, that's further on.
All right.
That's somewhere. Was that in Article 1?
It's in 1 and the bottom of this one.
We'll get to it.
Madam Chair and members, the next section in the House bill, Section 71, provides that the best and final offer solicitation process, which was defined back on Section 51 of this bill, can't be used for building and construction contracts. Section 72 of the House bill now is into a different topic. This deals with the Office of Enterprise Technology and first authorizes the state's chief information officer to enter into a contract for information system development in which a vendor would finance all or part of the cost of system development. The second part of this section provides that the chief information officer can assess a fee for business and occupational licenses for the purpose of developing and maintaining an electronic licensing system for these licenses. It requires LAC review of the fees. It provides for an expedited rulemaking process, and then it provides that in the upcoming biennium, the fee revenue received would be appropriated to the office for purposes of developing and maintaining this electronic system for business and occupational licenses. The next section in the House bill at the bottom of page 55 is related to an earlier section. This is appropriating to the legislative auditor some proceeds of audits they do for the state fair. The next section deals with the domestic partners of state employees in the state insurance program. The House bill defines domestic partner here, and the next section of the House bill, Section 75, provides that if a collective bargaining agreement or compensation plans provide state-paid employees for spouses, it must be made available to domestic partners on the same terms and conditions. And I think Mr. Bodern can explain some of the differences in a similar Senate provision.
Madam Chair and members, the Senate language appears in two different places. It's split up by some other sections. And the Senate version of Senate File 1997, on the bottom of page 23, the definition of domestic partner provided there is identical to the House definition except that it refers to a committed interdependent relationship with another adult of the same sex. The House bill does not have the limitation to the person being of the same sex. Then on the related Senate provision is on page 26, section 18, at the top there. The difference there is that it requires that the insurance be made available at full cost to domestic partners without state payment for any portion of the insurance. And then, let's see, just making sure that we're staying in order here. On page 57 of the House version, section 76 provides it amends a provision authorizing voluntary unpaid leave of absence and makes that permanent. The Senate has a similar item on page 43 of the Senate bill. That version is uncodified and limited to a two-year period. There may be very minor technical differences, but they're basically the same with the exception of the term limitation. Then I think we go back to the House file unless there are any other questions.
Where did that initiative come from?
Madam Chair and Senator Rest, I believe that was in the agency bill.
And Madam Chair and members, just to kind of keep in statutory order here, there is one more provision in the Senate bill I wanted to mention before going on page 26, section 19 of the Senate bill. Includes the legislative branch of state government along with the executive branch, which is in current law, in an existing early retirement incentive program. Going back to the House bill, then, on the bottom of page 57 and continuing over all the way through page 58 and 59, this is the House provision that requires state contractors who have contracts larger than $100,000 to have a pay equity compliance for their employees. The section specifies how this would be determined. It imposes a $75 fee for certificates of compliance, and it provides that the section is effective and applies to contracts issued after the effective date.
Madam Chair, over here.
Senate Olson.
Does that refer to prevailing wage then, or on that compliance, what you were just talking about there? It sounded like
This is related to the pay equity.
Within
class, male and female employees, similar to what we have for state employees and for local governments. This would then extend it to private companies above a certain size that have contracts with the state. Similar provisions somewhere in the Senate.
Well, and Madam Chair, the Senate just heard it in the Finance Committee yesterday.
Oh.
So it has not been brought up on the Senate floor, so the Senate has not had a position on this one yet, and we've not debated it yet.
Madam Chair, the next provision in the House bill is on page 59, section 78. This is related to the large group of sections relating to the state auditor that was discussed earlier. Section 79 at the bottom of page 59 extends the sunset date for the Mississippi River Parkway Commission until 2012. And I believe when we get the side-by-sides, we'll see that I believe there was a Senate bill that passed separately that also did this.
That's correct.
Madam Chair, section 80 at the top of page 60 of the House bill deals with sick leave. It extends the ability of an employee to use sick leave benefits due to illness or injury. Current law provides of the employee's child. This section adds spouse, sibling, parent, grandparent, step-parent, or domestic partner. Paragraph C defines domestic partner, and paragraph D provides that for purposes of this section, a school district employee is covered as an employee during any period of employment after the person has been employed for one school year.
You
then, Madam Chair, on the Senate version of Senate File 1997, on page 31, you'll find Section 30. That basically requires the commissioner, or allows the commissioner of revenue to disclose information from tax returns to the commissioner of finance for the purposes of preparing the revenue forecast.
And on the House side, Madam Chair, at the top, on page 61, that section requires the commissioner of revenue to maintain toll-free telephone access for taxpayer assistance within the state. Section 82 provides that when the Commissioner of Revenue awards grants to nonprofit organizations for taxpayer assistance, the Commissioner has to give public notice of them and also must notify recipients that of grants in the previous biennium. Section 83 and some of the subsequent sections are from initiated in a bill that Representative Bigham carried. It was a Secretary of State bill. Section 83, I believe, is identical to Section 31 in the Senate bill, requiring the Secretary to issue a certificate of administrative dissolution for a corporation that hasn't filed a registration during the calendar year. Section 84 of the House bill strikes a requirement that the Secretary of State inform the Attorney General and Commissioner of Revenue of methods by which names of dissolved cooperatives can be determined. Section 85 also relates to dissolution of cooperatives under Chapter 308B. Section 86 removes a requirement that a cooperative file an annual registration form with the Articles of Incorporation. Section 87 also deals with notice of intent to dissolve by cooperatives, requires notice to be given to the Secretary of State. Section 88 strikes language from the Nonprofit Corporation Registration Law that provides some separate treatment for volunteer firefighter relief associations. Section 89 on page 65 of the House bill, I believe, is identical or substantially identical to Senate Section 32, that there's no fee is due for a limited partnership filing a required annual report and a $35 fee for filing a name reservation for a foreign limited partnership. Section 90 requires a foreign limited partnership to notify the Secretary of State of changes to partnership names filed in another state. Section 91, I believe, is identical to Senate Section 33. It expands the purposes for which the Secretary of State can spend money in the Uniform Commercial Code account to include online or remote lien and business entity filing retrieval and payment method services. Section 92 refers to the Secretary of State using XML format in its central filing system of UCC records. Section 93, I believe, is identical to Senate Section 34 in providing a $20 fee instead of a $15 fee for certain UCC Uniform Commercial Code records delivered by electronic means, and in providing that $5 of these fees be deposited in the UCC account. And that's the conclusion of the Secretary of State provisions. The next provision in the House bill on page 69, Section 94, provides that the state lottery cannot move its operations at its Mountain Iron location to away from that area and may not reduce the complement of staff employed at this office. Section 95 deals with pension plan investment reports, which are required by current law. It requires them to be filed electronically with the state auditor unless the auditor determines that this isn't feasible. And it requires the auditor to provide web access to these reports. Sections 96 through 100 all deal with, these are from Article 2 of the Secretary of State's bill, and they all deal with notary issues and witnessing signatures and acknowledgments. And that brings to Section 101, which is, I believe, identical in the House and Senate bills. It's Senate Section 35, House Section 101. This is providing that units of local governments can provide dependent insurance coverage to others in addition to those named in statute at the discretion of the unit of local government. The next section, Madam Chair, on page 73 of the House bill is the what's known as the OPEB section. It authorizes units of local government to establish trusts for post-employment benefits. This was heard in a number of House committees. I believe it's been heard in the Senate, but I don't know the status of that.
Madam Chair, it's in the Senate Tax Committee, and it's in the Senate Tax Bill. Obviously, the Senate has to wait until the House passes its tax bill before we can pass ours as well, too. But that's where it will show up, and I think we'll just have to have somebody will have to decide which conference committee is going to have to work on it. But the Senate put it in the tax bill.
And, Madam Chair, that continues all the way over to the top of page 76. Section 103 at the top of page 76 is part of an initiative repealing a legislative commission on metropolitan government. This initiative passed the Senate early in the session as Senate File 19, and the House picked it up in this bill. This is a cross-reference. There's a repealer later in the House bill.
Madam Chair, actually, the Senate has passed it twice, if that gives you an indication of our stance
wow.
on it.
Okay. We only passed it once. So.
Madam Chair, the next section, 104, on page 76 of the House bill, is a fiscal issue. It provides the state auditor to bill the Commissioner of Revenue $614,000 instead of $217,000 each fiscal year, and it also provides that this billing would cover some of the costs of required Job Z audits as well as billing required in current law for some government information functions. At the bottom of page 76, section 105 allows the state to be represented in conciliation court by an employee of the Risk Management Division of the Department of Administration. Page 77, 106 provides that the Electronic Real Estate Recording Task Force can amend standards set by a prior task force and provides the documents recorded in conformity with those standards meet the requirements of Section 507.24.
Then, Madam Chair and members, I'll take you to the Senate version of Senate File 1997. On pages 35 and 36, there are two related sections, Sections 36 and 37. And what they do put together is to raise the marriage license fee by $10 and then to appropriate the entire amount of that increase for use by the county where the license is acquired.
Is this the Senate anti-marriage
position? No, no.
In undefense of marriage?
No. Madam Chair, this was brought actually by the counties because when my parents got married in Hennepin County in 1948, they paid $2 to the county, and that's how they paid for their marriage license. Over the years, the county gradually raised its fee, but then about the early 1980s, I believe, then the state decided to also get part of the fee. And the state has continued to raise its part of the marriage fee, license fee, but the counties have not since, I think, 1988. And now it costs the counties about $25 to issue a marriage license, but they only get $15 of the fee. So they just wanted to kind of keep up with what the cost is of actually raising the fee. This doesn't affect the states. It's a county issue.
Then, Madam Chair and members, I'll take you through the on the Senate version of Senate File 1997, the uncodified provisions that begin on page 37. You'll see Section 38 there relating to the Sesquicentennial Commission. I believe the Senate passed the House version of this bill independently today. So there
Madam
may
Chair, we don't need this anymore. The bill's gone to the governor.
The Senate concurred. Let's wait until the governor signs it.
Maybe that was one of the 15 items the governor said he was vetoing.
Controversial, let me assure you.
Okay.
Then on the bottom of page 38 of the Senate version, Section 39 abolishes the Department of Employee Relations effective June 1st, 2008. There was some discussion of that in relation to the discussion of the spreadsheets. That pretty much does what it says. Paragraphs B and C clarify exactly where particular duties, I think it's paragraph C, where the particular duties will be transferred to, basically within the Departments of Finance and Administration and some other items with the Office of Enterprise Technology. At the bottom of page 39, the Senate bill establishes a State Budget Trends Study Commission, which is basically analyzing long-term implications for the state budget using demographic information. There's also a related appropriation, I believe, in the Senate bill. At the bottom of page 40, section 41 establishes the Minnesota Commission on New Americans, and we've already discussed that in relation to the codified House language that's given a slightly different name that escapes me at the moment, the Minnesota Legislative Commission,
Ethnic.
I think it's the Office on Ethnic Heritage and New Americans, and as we discussed, those are quite similar. On page 42 of the Senate language, there's a provision that is matches section 115 in the House bill, Article 2, which is that's shown on the House bill on page 82. And that requires the Chief Information Officer to basically study how government data can be created and preserved to ensure access and interoperability. On page 43, we have already discussed section 43, which is the voluntary unpaid leave of absence. The Senate provides that for 2 years. The House makes that permanent. At the beginning and the very bottom of page 43 and shown at the top of page 44, there is a provision that basically removes the statutory requirement for an automatic rebate of a positive unrestricted general fund balance at the close of the current biennium and would carry that forward. The revisor's instruction you see on page 44 is related to abolishing the Department of Employee Relations, and then I'll go through the repealers very briefly since we're on that page right now. Paragraph A of section 46 contains two repealers that are related to the string of provisions that would eliminate assistant commissioner positions and restrict agencies to one deputy commissioner. And paragraph B, the repealer of laws 2006, chapter 53, section 22, repeals the requirement for the commissioner of administration to create a work group regarding the use of genetic information.
Madam Chair, I'll go back and just finish up the House provisions now. At the beginning on the bottom of page 78, instead of repealing the genetic information work group, the House provides that its report will be due January 15, 2009, instead of January 15, 2008. Section 108 in the House bill at the bottom of page 79 provides that a 2006 appropriation for the Office of Administrative Hearings does not cancel. Section 109, top of page 80, forbids demolition of the Ford Building on University Avenue during the upcoming biennium. Section 110, this is one that Representative Erdahl, I believe, asked about earlier. This is a task force to work with the Commissioner of Administration on a disparity study in state purchasing. The actual language, Representative Erdahl, the appropriation for this is in Article 1 in the appropriation section of the bill, but this is a task force that goes with it. This does not relate to the veterans at all. This is different groups. Section 111 goes along with the OPEB provisions that we discussed earlier, and this is a temporary provision that validates trusts that units of local government have already created. Section 112 requires the Commissioner of Finance to do a report listing areas where state budgeting principles differ from generally accepted accounting principles and the reasons. Section 113 requires the Department of Administration to collect rent revenues for two buildings to be set aside in a special revenue fund. I believe there's a similar Senate provision, maybe in a different article.
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling had that bill, and it passed the Senate, I think, yesterday.
Very different. Madam Chair, members, Section 114 at the bottom of page 81 and the top of page 82 requires full compensation for state employees, those who are still employed, who were prevented from working due to the partial government shutdown in July of 2005. Section 115 on the House bill, page 82, as Mr. Bodern mentioned, is the electronic document study and report. There are some differences between the House and the Senate, but I think it'll be easier to highlight those when we have the side-by-side in front of you. Section 116 ratifies labor agreements, compensation plans, and salaries for state employees that have previously been approved by the LCC Subcommittee on Employee Relations. Section 117 is a state employee electronic records health pilot project to provide consumer-owned electronic personal health records to participants in the state employee group insurance program. Section 118 relates to the director of the Office of Enterprise Technology and contracts for development of certain information systems projects. It authorizes the director to enter into contracts under which the vendor upfronts some of the costs so that the state accounting system wouldn't necessarily show an encumbrance when the director enters into a contract. And it specifies some conditions for these contracts and some reporting that would be required. Section 109 appropriates $4.1 million for payments to certain persons, pre-69 teachers. This is an issue that's been discussed in the Pension Commission before, and this would appropriate money and require waiver of certain claims. Just as I was contacted by the Teachers Retirement Association before this meeting, and they just so we can remember, there's apparently some technical language that would need to be changed here if the conferees adopt this provision. Section 120 goes along with the provisions on the pay equity for state contractors, and it has some temporary provisions on the certificate of compliance. Section 121 creates a sustainable growth work group and provides for appointment of members. This would be a one-year group that would expire June 30th, 2008. Section 122 at the bottom of 87 requires House and Senate staff to assist the LCC with duties assigned to it throughout in several places in this act. Section 123 requires that state executive agencies consider using services provided by the Government Training Services Group before contracting with outside vendors for similar services. Madam Chair, I'm going to go through the repealers because some of them are substantive and don't necessarily relate to things that I've talked about already. So I'll just point out what these repealers are. Section 3.884 is the Minnesota-Ontario Commission. 3.8841 is the Legislative Commission of Metropolitan Government. 6.56 relates to the State Auditor political subdivision issue. 6A.102 is the price of government resolution. 16B.055 subdivision 3 is the sunset of an advisory group in the Department of Administration for Assistive Technology. An earlier section of the bill provides that that group does not sunset. 16C.055 is a requirement for the legislative auditor to it's an old requirement on state barter arrangements that's now obsolete. 16C.08 subdivision 4A relates to the Department of Administration initiative on performance evaluation of work done on contracts. It's replaced by another section in this bill. 69.051 is from the Secretary of State's bill. It's a requirement for the state auditor to send the Secretary of State a list of names of volunteer fire relief associations meeting certain financial standards. 359.085 is one of the notary public provisions. And 645.44 subdivision 19 is the definition of fee and tax that is in statute. Madam Chair, we did not reproduce for you today any articles 3, 4, and 5 of the House bill. It's my understanding that those will be discussed at a later time when you have a side-by-side in front of you.
Questions? Any points that people would like further discussion on?
Madam Chair, just pointing out one further item, if that repeal of the Metropolitan Governance Commission ends up being carried in this bill rather than independently. There's another section of law that had a number of duties that were of the Metropolitan Council to that commission, and in the Senate bill, we transferred the that accountability to the committees and divisions with jurisdiction over the Metropolitan Council, and wherever that's carried, the issue is to Senate continue the accountability.
Senator Rest, I'm pretty sure it's in this bill somewhere. I sort of remember
that
see language.
It.
Madam Chair, Senator Rest, I think Section 103 of the House bill
does have that.
Does require the Met Council to continue the report and provide it to the chairs of the relevant legislative committees.
With the same language?
Yes.
That's in current statute?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. I didn't see that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other points or questions? I think this is all we can productively do today. I think at some point, I don't know, at some point, maybe we would ask staff to put together the identical provisions, and maybe we can get, maybe a staff can do that.
Identical provisions in Article 1 or Article 1 and 2, or how do you...
Well, whatever.
I think until we get the side-by-side, Madam Chair, I think it's going to be kind of difficult because the Senate has passed a number of things independently.
I was starting at least with the ones that are identical in the bill. We'll have to discuss the things that are in different bills or that are independent in one and in the bill in the other. That can be discussed separately. But there are certain things which are identical in both bills. And maybe we can make some progress in getting those.
Is that something that the staff, for Articles 1 and 2, is that something we could have something that is identical or nearly identical done for tomorrow with them? Okay. Apparently, they so why don't we plan on discussing that tomorrow and at least seeing what's there and what progress we can make on that. And if I think of anything else that should be done, if that's not a long enough list, I'll certainly contact you and let you know if there's anything further that is on our mind or something.
And I understand tomorrow it's at the call of the chair a half an hour after the last session and not later than 4.
That's correct. let me repeat it for anybody who did not come in.
Does that run-on sentence make sense?
Yeah. We'll meet 1/2 hour after the second body adjourns. But if one of the bodies starts going on at some point, like if it's 4 o'clock, we will not meet. And then in any event, whenever we meet, I'm pretty sure we're going to be done, say, by 5 o'clock. I can say that because I recognize, Madam Chair, you've got a commitment you have to be too. So we will not be meeting certainly beyond 5 o'clock tomorrow. Hopefully we'll be able to meet shortly. We are not planning on meeting on Friday because the House is taking up the tax bill, and just because of the uncertainty of how long that's going to take, I don't think we can plan on that. But we are planning on meeting on Saturday morning at about 9 a.m. and not going too late in the morning or maybe early afternoon. We'll get some work done on Saturday morning, but not too long. Any questions?
Okay. I think that's it. Meeting adjourned.